Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving, and I hereby gavel to order these confirmation hearings for the nomination of Ken Rudin to be Secretary of the Exterior. Ken? Did you have an opening statement?
I do.
You care to enter it into the record?
Oh, and I'm Ken Rudin. This was an interesting week, though, with confirmation hearings. We don't have a new president yet, but we
have a president-elect.
We have a president-elect,
and he has not made any nominations because he is not president.
But he has signaled his choices for certain cabinet positions.
Yes, and they are secretaries-designate.
That's correct. And we have seen some very high-profile hearings this week, Senate Foreign Relations with Hillary Clinton.
The highest profile of all.
And Judiciary Committee with Eric Holder for Attorney General. Well,
yes.
I think those are the two biggies.
Okay, let's take them one at a time. Let's start with the one that we all expected to be the fireworks hearing, Eric Holder for Attorney General.
Right, because there's more in his record, I think, that the Republicans certainly wanted to go after, and that is his role in acquiescing of Bill Clinton's controversial pardon of fugitive financier Mark Rich in 2001. His ex-wife, Denise Rich, just so happens, contributed several hundred thousand dollars to the Democratic Party.
Isn't it funny, whenever you say just so happens, it isn't just so happens?
What
you're really bringing that up for is because that's why it's controversial.
Exactly.
If he had just been a bad dude, a wrongo, that they had chosen to pardon, then that would have been one thing.
Right.
But, of course, it looked like a payoff for all those gifts that she had given to the Democratic Party.
Right.
And how can you say it was not? You can never say it was not. And he got himself involved in that, should have known better, and he has said so himself.
Right. And we'll talk about Hillary Clinton's confirmation in a second. But both Hillary Clinton and Eric Holder, their roles in the Clinton administration came under attack. And it almost seems like they're still, no matter what they do, nobody can get away from Bill Clinton, even though he's not been president for months now.
But back to Eric Holder here. There was another case that Eric Holder was involved in back in those pardon days, and that's a little stickier wicket even in some people's minds than the Mark Rich pardon.
Right. This is the clemency of Puerto Rican nationalists, FALN, I guess.
I think that's right. And they held up an armored car in Hartford, Connecticut.
Right. No one was killed.
Nonetheless, it was defined as activities we would now refer to as terrorist activities. And, you know, the book was thrown at them, probably a lot worse than people who weren't Puerto Rican nationalists. And that's part of the basis by which this was recommended.
At the time, though, when the clemency was offered by President Clinton, the charge was that he was doing it to help a constituency in Hillary Clinton's bid for the U.S. Senate in 2000.
Because she was obviously interested in getting as many Puerto Rican votes
right.
in 2000 as she
right.
possibly could. Heavens, you know, could that possibly have occurred to the Clintons? Who knows? But it is interesting, as you say, that it was Bill Clinton who carried both of these two people into political
Holder
lives.
And Hillary.
Yes, and also is still a kind of millstone around their necks
right.
all these years later.
It was interesting. A lot of people were talking about the motivations behind Arlen Specter, the ranking Republican from Pennsylvania, on the Judiciary Committee.
Well, he's an upholder of the law.
Right, who he really
is. He's a former prosecutor.
But he is running for another term in 2010. So, therefore, you wonder if one of the reasons that Arlen Specter is waving the Republican flag in the Eric Holder is to burnish his conservative credentials when he's obviously going to be challenged again in the May 2010 primary.
That's pretty deep game there, Ken. We wouldn't really think Arlen Specter would be thinking about his own reelection in 2010 this early, would we?
A year away, Ron.
So there were a couple of other people who gave him a little bit of a hard time on the committee, Tom Coburn from Oklahoma, Sam Brownback from Kansas in particular. They may vote against him, but how many votes are there going to be against him on
the committee? Actually, nobody has said they will vote against Holder, and that may be the case. They may be one or two. He seems to be the most controversial nominee, or at least at the outset he was, and there are questions, but ultimately he will be confirmed.
He may have two or three votes against him in committee, but on the floor he's got no problems.
While we're not sure if there's going to be any opposition at all to Eric Holder, there was substantial opposition to Hillary Clinton in the vote.
Oh, yes, huge, huge.
16-1.
All right, so the one vote against Hillary Clinton was David Vitter, but you know, even that vote against her, which was apparently delivered by proxy.
Yep.
He wasn't even there present to do it. At the hearings, nobody gave her very much trouble. There weren't any hostile questions. When you think back on the Hillary Clinton of the 1990s, the way she was treated in the media, the way she was treated by conservatives, the fear factor about this woman when she was...
Personification of evil for the Republicans.
Oh, it was a remarkable, remarkable turnaround to see her sitting in front of all these conservative senators, and they were practically eating out of her hand. There was no Jesse Helms, all right. But
Even the conservatives on this committee were basically not giving her any trouble at all. It was almost as though they had no problem with her. She might have been Margaret Thatcher as far as they were concerned.
Well, part of it, of course, is she's still, as of this date, still a member of the club. She hasn't resigned yet. She's still one of them.
A senator.
And the one controversy that she comes into the hearings with is whether the appearance of conflict of interest, those who gave money to the Bill Clinton Foundation, might they want to curry favor with the Secretary of State. She says it was handled. There's an agreement already. The Obama administration will be informed if there's any foreign contributions to the Clinton Foundation. And she just kind of dismissed it. And there are a lot of editorial hand-wringing around the country, but ultimately the Republicans had no answer.
Yeah. You mentioned, well, Dick Lugar brought it up right away.
Right.
The ranking member of the committee, right in his opening statement, he brought it up. But that, in a way, that almost spiked it as an issue, that he brought it up so early. She dealt with it early. Prediction, there's going to be trouble. Bill Clinton is going to be taking some money personally through a foundation, one way or another, that's going to be interpreted as an attempt to influence his wife.
But,
mark my words.
But they do say that the agreement as of now is that they report on the foundation money once a year. So for all we know, this could happen months after the fact.
That's right. But when it does come to light, then there will be controversy about it. He will do something to embarrass her, and probably before too long in this job.
Okay, so Eric Holder, Hillary Clinton, certainly there were headlines, but there's no threat to their nomination
to
the cabinet.
Neither one. And then you look down the list, you've got Janet Napolitano at Homeland Security, Tom Vilsack at Agriculture, Ken Salazar at Interior. They had love fests for hearings. I mean, there was just no problem at all.
How about Tim Geithner at Treasury?
Now, see, that was one that was supposed to be utterly greased. Here's a guy who's been serving the Federal Reserve under George W. Bush's appointee, Ben Bernanke, and he's been the president of the New York Fed. Universally respected, but all of a sudden, he is the last hope for real controversy in the whole confirmation process
The thought of somebody, Secretary of Treasury, heading up the IRS, somebody who did not pay Social Security and Medicare taxes when he was working for the International Monetary Fund 2001-2003.
And was deemed a contractor and therefore responsible for both ends of his Social Security.
It's an embarrassment, yes. It's a distraction. Harry Reid called it a hiccup. Republicans say it's serious. Again, I don't think anybody feels, given all the enormity of problems with the economy, people are not saying, let's throw this nominee overboard because of this, but
it's an embarrassment, and it's fodder for late-night comedians, and it's fodder for people like you and me who don't fit into any of those categories.
And my motto.
But even though he's paid that money back, I think it really sets people off to think that somebody like him gets away with that kind of thing, and all the folks in Washington just throw up their hands and say, honest mistake, you know, we are not upset by that. I think that's very off-putting to people, and it gets him started on a very bad foot.
With the Bill Richardson thing, with the Geithner thing.
Now, Bill Richardson withdrew as Commerce Secretary
investigation. And there are apparently additional investigations going on in New Mexico. There may be something more there than we thought.
Yes, and so that was actually a break for the Obama administration.
There's some questions about Leon Panetta. And now, of course, Dianne Feinstein made a brief but noticeable stink over the fact that she was not consulted in advance about Panetta. And there's some questions about his lack of intelligence credentials, even though as Bill
That's part of the reason they picked him. He wasn't any part of the intelligence community.
That's right.
They wanted a guy from outside.
Right.
By the way, another thing that Dianne Feinstein objected to was the strategy the Democratic Senate leaders were using to deal with Roland Burris' appointment to replace Barack Obama.
Roland Burris, you mean the guy who absolutely would not be confirmed?
Well, there's
no
way we're going to let this guy in.
Harry,
no. No one associated with Rod Blagojevich will ever sit in this Senate.
Harry Reid, Dick Durbin, Barack Obama all said no way.
You're talking now about Senator Roland Burris.
The fourth African-American senator since Reconstruction. Ron Elving, named the first three.
Carol Moseley Braun, Barack Obama, and Edward Brooke
from
Massachusetts, and all the others are from Illinois.
Right, except for February, which only has 28.
That's it for this week's
political
podcast.
Wait. Okay, Senator, so we finally have the Illinois situation resolved. We still do not have a resolution.
Well, it's not resolved when it comes to Rod Blagojevich himself. I can say Blagojevich, but I can't say resolved. All right, this week, what happened?
I love this.
A governor of Illinois swore in the state senate of Illinois, which is about to try him, convict him, and yank him out of office.
Can't make this stuff up.
No. And he actually swore in his own jurors.
Executioners.
Yes, his own executioners.
Right, exactly.
I don't know why we think this is so funny. But he just refuses to have the class to resign and has for weeks and months. And it's just extraordinary that somebody could have so little self-regard.
Did you know that he actually said he was invited to attend a DGA, Democratic Governors Association, inaugural bash for Barack Obama. He was seriously considering attending the inauguration. He decided not to. But
really?
He thought it might be a distraction.
Well, maybe he just couldn't find a good dress.
Well, or at least a nameplate that large.
Soon he'll be getting an opportunity to make large nameplates.
But I don't.
Land of Lincoln. Stamp!
I don't think so.
You don't think he's going to jail?
No.
I think he will.
Okay. Now that we have the Senate seat in Illinois resolved, we do not have a resolution yet in the New York and Minnesota Senate seats. Some updates, though.
Okay.
David Patterson, the governor of New York, indicates that he may be closer to naming a successor to Hillary Clinton sooner than we thought. At first, he said that he was not going to name anybody until she resigned her Senate seat. He may do it even sooner.
Because it's so clear that she is now going to be confirmed. That's what he said.
Right.
But he didn't tell us who he was leaning towards, but we did see a couple of polls this week from the New York area.
Both the Quinnipiac polls and the Marist poll both have State Attorney General Andrew Cuomo with a
40%.
Well, 40% in Marist. It was leading both polls over Caroline Kennedy,
easily.
Who seems to be the front runner.
That's right. Now, we've all thought, and I have certainly said, that we expect David Patterson to name Caroline Kennedy.
You have said that from the beginning, yes.
But at the same time, these polls have got to give everybody pause because she does not seem to be faring very well in them at all, and her numbers, if anything, have flattened a little bit. So she's not catching on as a nominee potential. Now, she may do fine as a senator if she gets the job, but she has not yet caught the public imagination.
Her supporters and Patterson's people have both said that these polls are a reflection of negative media coverage of Caroline Kennedy, her Valley Girl way of speaking, her ums and maybes and uhs and those things and like that. Totally. But it's interesting. To know Andrew Cuomo was not to like him.
I was amazed that 40% of the people in New York had clearly not met Andrew Cuomo.
And my Kirsten Gillibrand, the congresswoman from Hudson Valley, New York, is not just faring well in the polls.
Not happening. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry, because I do think that she is an able person and will have a good career, but apparently she's not going to get this enormous boost.
Could be a decision by Governor Patterson within days. We talk about what he says, though, that the polls are a reflection of negative media coverage on Caroline Kennedy.
You know what they're doing? They're making her a martyr. So then when he appoints her, then the sympathy goes the other way. Instead of people saying, well, she's just got that because it was all wired by the cameras.
And he also needs somebody who is a big name. Kirsten Gillibrand is not a big name.
Although, well, it's a long name.
Well, Rod Blagojevich is a big name.
No, very long name.
Yes. And she needs somebody who could raise a lot of money for 2010 because for the first time in years, the Republicans indicate...
Quick question.
Yeah?
Who is the Republican nominee in 2010?
Well, that's what I'm going to say. No, they are showing signs of life. They're talking about Rudy Giuliani for governor, Congressman Peter King for the Senate. Whether they run or not is one thing, but these are better names than the clowns that the Republicans have put up for governor and senator in recent years in New York.
That's true, but they're going to have a very tough time in 2010 in New York with those candidates or any other candidates, so it's probable that anyone that David Patterson puts in the Senate with the Democratic Party label is going to be formidable in 2010.
I agree.
All right. What about Minnesota?
Still Al Franken with a 225-vote lead.
Landslide Al.
He has, last week, he asked the Republican Governor Tim Pawlenty, the Democratic Secretary of State Mark Ritchie, to certify him.
And Ritchie said?
They both said no because Norm Coleman, the apparently defeated Republican incumbent, is still fighting. It's a legal case. It's in the courts.
He hasn't been ruled out from the standpoint of filing challenges to the process.
Which he will do, and I still say the answer is Al Franken will be the next senator, but it won't happen in the month of January.
No, it probably won't happen in the month of February. It's looking as though the schedule, at least the schedule the Coleman people wanted to lay out, would take it into March. So the Democrats are going to have to wait to get that 59th vote in the Senate.
So we don't have Al Franken yet, but we did say goodbye to Joe Biden after 36 years, gave his farewell speech.
He's going to be back as the presiding officer of the Senate, at least on ceremonial occasions. As vice president, he will preside.
And sworn in to replace him on Friday was
Ted Kaufman,
his longtime aide.
Another household name.
It's interesting. Bo Biden is coming back from Iraq to witness his father's inauguration as vice president.
I think it's great to see the boys coming home.
You knew that if Barack Obama and Joe Biden were elected, troops would be coming home. We didn't know it would be one troop.
But he'll probably also be going back.
He will be going back.
All right. And one person, though, we don't expect to see back, and that is George W. Bush. He is going to Camp David for his final weekend at Camp David. He has given his last news conference this week. He gave his farewell speech to the nation this week as well.
And so, my fellow Americans, for the final time, good night. May God bless this House and our next president. And may God bless you and our wonderful country. Thank you.
Ken, final thoughts on George W. Bush?
And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ken Rudin.
And I'm Ron Elvin.
Join us next week for another edition of It's All Politics from NPR. Bye.